From KMUW Wichita.
From Toronto, Ontario.
And from Armilla, Spain.
This is You're Saying It Wrong. Let's talk words. Let's talk about what happens when we remove an entire verb from our language. A pretty important verb. I'm Fletcher Powell, host and producer at KMUW in Wichita, Kansas. And joining me, as they do each week, language experts and New York Times bestselling authors Kathy Petras and Ross Petras. Well, hi, Kathy. You are, of course, there at your home in Armilla, looking lovely with your blue or purple glasses and your blue or purple shirt. I can't completely tell the colors there, but
blue.
It all looks very nice. And speaking of blue, Ross with his lovely navy blue shirt. You guys really coordinated today. I think that looks
great.
Always
try to color coordinate.
We're
going to have our check suit week next week.
Yes, please. I have a question for both of you. How goes it today?
We're glad you asked.
Oh.
Does it go well?
That's the first time in my entire life I've ever said, how goes it? I just want to make that clear.
Really?
Yes.
I sometimes say, how goes it? How goes it?
Do you say, how goes it? Actually, I don't mean to be mean here, Kathy. Have you ever said, I don't think I've ever
I
heard
have
you say,
said, how goes it to people that you don't know.
Oh, okay.
But I usually say, how you doing?
How you doing is what you say usually. Yeah. The weird thing is, though, I mean, when you said it, I wasn't actually really trying to question you, because before you said it, I would have unhesitatingly said, we've said, how goes it? Then suddenly when Fletcher said, how goes it, I thought, have I ever said, how goes it?
I have. I actually, in honesty, I think I have. I really believe that. And I'm not making it up.
No, I believe you.
It's a false memory. I usually say, how you doing?
What do I say? I say, how's it going?
You say, how's it going?
Hey, Kath, how's it going? Yeah, I do.
Yeah.
What do you say, Fletcher?
You doing?
What do you say?
I mean, I say all sorts of things, but never how goes it.
Well, we're going to learn about it anyway, Fletcher.
Yeah. Why did I bring this up to begin with?
The reason we're belaboring the how goes it point is we got an email from Christopher in Jersey City who said, I've got a question for you. How goes it? No, I'm not asking how you are. I'm asking about that phrase. I noticed myself writing this to a friend and realized that it is the only time one says goes it, at least as far as I could determine. Where does this construction come from? Is it a fossil phrase or just an oddity?
How goes it actually probably comes from the German. I'm sure Kathy's husband's going to start screaming at me.
Also other European languages.
But it probably came
in.
It did. It probably came into English via German or Dutch, since that was the first, you know, that was the first real contact between the two languages. And there it becomes wie geht's. Is that how you say it? Wie geht's dir or wie geht's, which is a literal translation from the German, how goes it? That's not a normal English usage of the word. And actually, there's an interesting comment I'm going to make here. Was that a good pronunciation or not? It wasn't very good. Wie geht's?
You're looking at me. Randy's not here. I have no idea.
Oh, okay. I don't speak German. Both of our spouses do, but neither of us does. But anyway, that's interesting. It's called, in English, it's called a calque, which comes from the French. That's a linguistic term. And it's literally a word-for-word translation from another language into English. Okay, do you understand that or not?
Yeah. And I remember us bringing up that word calc a long time ago, too. That's interesting.
Can I throw something out here and bore you all with a little bit of etymology or not?
Oh, please. Oh, please.
You're gonna, so.
I looked up calc the other day. I'm like, where did it come from? And it comes from the French, calque, which comes from the Latin heel, which I thought was really interesting. Like, what does a heel have to do with a word-for-word translation? And it turns out that it's the French calque means to literally press something on, like you're pressing on a word, basically. In this case, it was usually used for like printing, I guess, or something like that.
Mm-hmm.
And therefore, when you get it down to it, the heel presses, calx is the word for heel in Latin. So it comes from the heel pressing onto something. Isn't that cool?
Yeah.
It is. I like that.
And now I'm going to throw out my second etymological question. Are there any other words? Calx also in Latin means limestone, and it has a different origin. But going to calx meaning heel, are there any other words can you think of in the English language that are related to it? I'll give you 20 seconds to decide.
Any other words related to calc?
To calc, yeah. From the Latin calx. Any word related, in fact, any words related to calx heel. They're completely, completely you would never think of them.
Calcium?
One makes sort of, no, that comes from calx, the Latin word for.
For limestone?
Different origin, limestone. Yeah.
Okay, okay.
That's a good guess though, Fletcher. Okay, I'll tell you quickly so we can move on. Decal, which makes sense.
Oh, yeah. Because you're pressing on. Yeah.
And then the other word is really weird, recalcitrant.
Wow.
Ah, because you're not pressing something on. You're,
no,
you're,
because you're... a horse is kicking you with its heel in the back.
Yeah,
where's,
I guess,
this
so.
Horse? If I don't someone... even, I don't understand.
Where are your horses in Latin?
I got no horse.
I mean, you, well, not you, Kathy, but a person might be the horse, right? A person's recalcitrant, maybe. And so
yeah, the horse is recalcitrant.
They're the horse kicking you.
Yeah.
Wow.
Okay.
So how goes it then, I guess, is a calc of that phrase in German or maybe Dutch. Uh-huh.
Right.
Or it's also like in Spanish, you say como te va, which is exactly the same as the German. It's a very common European construction. You have, you, it's an interrogation. It's a question. And it's you've got a verb equivalent to go, and then you add indirect object pronouns. It's very common in most other languages. You just don't have it that often in English.
Actually, it's not direct in Spanish, though, because it's te, it's you. I think the French would be more, but it's not. That's not literally how goes.
It's the same as vi gets deer.
No, it isn't.
However you pronounce
vi
it.
Vi gets
it
deer. No, no, but vi gets is it. There's it there, too, isn't it?
How goes it?
Yeah, but French is... In French, it would be comment ça va, which is how goes it.
How it goes.
But in, yeah, how it goes. But in Spanish, wouldn't it be, isn't comment ça va like how goes you?
How you go.
Yeah. How you go. Yeah, you're right, actually.
Yeah, I mean, it's a minor point. I'm just wondering.
I'm just saying, though, but the construction is the
that
same.
That inversion?
It's a similar construction.
Yes.
It's,
you're right.
It's inversion.
That's the key. I think Kathy is completely correct.
Yeah. So I'm saying it's instead of, because we talked about this a few weeks ago. Remember we talked about do support?
Yeah.
Like when you add the word, you insert do. It's kind of like a different version of do support. It's not do support because it's inversion, but you're accomplishing the same thing with the do support. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, do support like, yeah, I might do, instead of just saying, yeah, I might.
Yeah.
Yeah.
That inversion thing I remember a lot when I was learning French, most of which I forgot, but I always remember thinking, why don't we really have that in English? Whenever we do use it, it sounds a little silly to me. You hear people say, like, what say you? And I'm not sure where that started, but it's happened a lot over the past couple
have
decades.
I've said that as well, actually. What say you?
Mm-hmm.
I've said it more in a stuffy, fake way.
Yeah,
though, I think.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Well, it's the older version. I mean, because we go back to the Germanic. There was one example we read that I actually liked, and it was like, inversion in Baba Black Sheep. It's have you any wool?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
And you wouldn't say that now. You would say, do you have any wool? Mm-hmm.
The inversion is an older form of English.
Correct. Exactly. Yeah. Exactly.
And then we ended up like shoving in the do and changing English, really, is what happened.
Hmm.
So in a way, I mean, that actually raises a point, which I'm sort of curious about, and I don't know if any of us know it, but is then how goes it a calque of the German, which everyone says it is, or could it be just a fossilized old English before the do came in?
Right.
Do you have any idea, Kath?
I don't have an idea, but that makes sense, because didn't they say things like, how be ye and stuff?
Yeah, yeah.
I mean, I'm just thinking.
You know, like Kathy calls on the phone all the time. How be ye, Ross?
Why do I have that accent, Ross? No.
That's an old English accent. Don't you know?
So I don't know, because we were confidently saying, oh, it's not a fossil phrase, but it kind of is.
Yeah.
Possibly.
Yeah.
See, Christopher, aren't you glad you asked? How you doing now, Chris? Huh?
How be ye? Okay, moving on to the next topic, Fletcher. This is sort of interesting. Kath and I were chatting the other day, as we always do, and she started talking about her time in PR and her boss, who sadly died a few years later.
She died of bunion surgery.
Which is
actually
weird, but let's don't go.
It's depressing.
But anyway, her boss said, Kathy said she used to suffer because her boss never let her use the to be verb. is, am, are, was, etc. in press releases.
Whoa.
It was hell. It was, I can't tell you how hard it was to write them.
Can you give me an example of what you mean?
It was for Ad Age magazine was what I wrote PR for. And I would say, like, you know, the conference is going to be on the 9th of August.
Uh-huh.
You would have to say, on the 9th of August, no, that's, there will be a concert.
The ninth conference. Advertising
the
Age
ninth
is
of
present-
August oh, marks. Oh, that's it. Okay.
Presents the, yeah. Presents the, or marks, Kathy, that, yeah, the date of whatever.
Wow.
The annual, yeah. Bloody blah. It was, it took forever to write the most minor press release.
And
it did.
Said, when Kathy said this, I was like, I said, wow, she's a proponent of the English dialect called E prime. And Kat said, what is E prime?
And I said, huh?
And we started looking it up. And we're going to ask you, Fletcher, right now, because we're sure you know. Huh. Do you know what E prime is?
Of course. And let's move on to the next topic. No, tell me about this. This sounds insane.
Okay.
This is insane.
Yeah. Do you want to go on with it a little? It's really cool.
Yeah. Okay. First of all, E prime is short, very cleverly, for English prime.
Okay.
Lest you
okay.
were confused.
Yeah. Now it sounds even worse. Here we go.
It was a proposition by D. David Borland Jr. He was a student of the philosopher and linguist Alfred Korzybski. Thank you, Ross, for letting me read this. Korzybski, who developed general semantics. And he thought that, Borland thought, that if you remove the term in all of its forms of to be, people would both think more clearly and avoid misleading statements.
Wow.
Yeah, the key idea is Korzybski, with the general semantics, have the basic idea that there's a lot of complexity. As soon as you say something about him, everyone goes, well, actually, he meant this. But you can't, I mean, these philosophers, you can never really, really delve into it without reading
it. Pin down.
Yeah. But the basic idea is that everything we do, we see, say, or whatever, is mediated through our senses, eyes, ears, seeing, feeling, etc. So therefore, the to-be verb, like, for example, the cat is fuzzy, is like basically, is the cat fuzzy? How do we know that? We know that, or we're saying that, because we've touched the cat or see the cat.
It's based on our. It's based on us. It's coming
right.
through us. It's
right.
not coming. The cat is not acting. We are acting.
Right.
Yeah.
In effect.
And the cat is not the cat. We don't really know if the cat exists as a fuzz thing or not. The only thing we do know is that
we're getting into Schrodinger territory.
I know. We're perceiving the cat being fuzzy.
The cat is both fuzzy and not fuzzy.
Yeah. Well, the cat. Actually, we're going to be changing a little bit even there. The cat could be fuzzy.
Could be,
or not.
Right.
We don't even know.
So we're saying, like, instead of the cat is fuzzy, we'd be saying, like, the cat appears fuzzy or the cat feels fuzzy.
Right. The cat
exactly.
feels fuzzy to me. Exactly.
Right.
Well, you don't even have to say the to me. Wouldn't that be implied? Or do you have to say the to me in E prime?
Well, I don't think he really specified that.
I'm trying to be picky here.
He wrote a book. I think it was great, though. I think he wrote two books. And it was, like, the E prime book was To Be or Not. An E prime anthology. Don't you like that?
Okay. I I get the idea. I think in practice it sounds like it's just horrifying, but I kind of understand where he's coming from.
Yeah, and the key thing, what it really does, and I think probably this is what Kathy's boss was trying to get her to do, is most passives are formed with passive forms are formed with to be verbs. I was tired. Basically, by getting rid of to be, you get rid of an awful lot of passive verb constructions. And therefore, I think, to be fair to your boss, in a press release, you want to get, you know, action, let's go.
Mm-hmm.
Well, yeah, but there are times when you need to be. Let me just tell you, when you're writing a press release,
yeah.
sometimes it's, and you can be active with to be too, okay?
I agree with you. I think you're right.
It's bringing back very bad memories. I'm getting
Kathy's
tense.
Kathy's getting a little techie here, yeah. techie, yeah. No, but the key thing is it does reduce dramatically your to be. I mean, you can form it to be like, you know, he got tired, I guess, would be sort of a passive tense, but be is the real heavy lifter when it comes to passive.
Yeah, like you say, the cake is delicious.
Mm-hmm. Let's have Fletcher do the translations. Fletcher,
okay.
Let's do a test. You're going to translate things into E prime, okay?
Fantastic.
Okay. They're not easy.
Oh,
And then you're going to write a press release for us.
And let's talk about each time what the to be verb does, too.
Okay, first, in this case, the to be verb talks about identity. The cat is my only pet. The cat is Garfield.
Translate, E prime.
The cat's, well, which part? The cat's name is Garfield. I have named the cat Garfield. I named the cat Garfield.
Okay, good. But the cat is my only pet.
I only have one pet. Oh, this is hard.
Right,
good,
you
good.
You did it.
Well, but I have only one pet.
I haven't identified.
Named Garfield.
I haven't identified that pet is a cat, have I? I only have one pet.
Okay, you're right.
I can't say that pet is a cat because then I'm using the to be verb. I have only one cat-shaped pet from the feline family.
Here's Kathy's quick. Kat did this really quickly. I was really impressed. I have only one pet. Garfield the cat.
Garfield the cat. Good.
Wasn't that good?
Good. Yes.
Okay. I'm going to open the next one. Another use of the to be verb, when you think about it, is it talks about belonging to a class or a group. Mm-hmm. And you did that earlier with the feline group.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. The cat is an animal. Translate that from E prime, into E prime.
The cat belongs to the animal kingdom.
Fletcher, A plus.
Hey, that's exactly it.
Ugh.
Okay, the to be can talk about properties. This is what we were talking about before. The cat is furry. This is a gimme. You got this.
Right.
The cat is furry. E prime version.
The cat appears furry, or the cat feels furry.
Right. Perfect.
The cat is covered. Oh, I can't say is. I was going to say fur covers the cat.
That's a good one.
Okay, the to be can also be an auxiliary verb. The cat is sleeping.
I guess you could say the cat sleeps.
Mm-hmm. You could.
Mm-hmm.
The cat sleeps now.
Okay.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, let's expand this a little bit. The sleeping cat is now bitten by the dog.
The dog, like currently it's happening as we speak. It needs to be present.
Well, it is bitten.
Present tense.
Yeah, because it is present tense. Yeah.
The dog bites the sleeping cat now.
Right.
Mm-hmm.
Right. And one thing about that, and again, in deference to Kathy's boss, that's much more energetic. The cat is bitten by the dog.
Although I think in that case, you would have said the dog bites the cat. I don't think you would say the cat is bitten by the dog.
Let's change it then. The cat was bitten by the dog. Now let's put that into E prime.
Well, yeah, the dog bit the cat.
Yeah.
But it's easier in past tense. If I want it to be in present I have to figure out a way to make it sound like it's happening now. Like
mm-hmm.
Is biting is easy. Like, okay, we know that's mm-hmm. that's occurring right now. But otherwise I have to say the dog bites the cat now.
Yeah.
Or I see the dog, but in that sense, we're going back to what Kobieski and
I see the dog biting the cat.
Yeah, yes. Putting yourself in as the agent. That's what we're not doing a lot.
Yeah,
of, but
you're right.
Normally, have the me in there.
Okay.
Yeah.
The I or the me.
Because again, going back to that philosopher, the idea that is we're really basically mediating it through our own senses to some degree.
Right. So I saw the dog bite the cat.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
I see the dog bite the cat.
Yeah. I mean, this is obviously not useful in all situations.
Yeah, the truth is a lot of it is implied in our in our language.
Yeah.
We all understand that we're filtering things through our senses. Or
exactly.
At least to the extent that it's useful for our lives. I mean, maybe we don't all.
Yeah.
Yeah. I think the real key point with E prime is it's like an exercise, I think, really.
Yeah.
To make us think. To make
it
us.
It was unfortunately not just an exercise for Kathy when she was in PR.
No, it was not.
It was the reality. Yeah.
And the final two, we have existence. Mm-hmm. There is a cat.
Mm-hmm. The cat exists.
Yeah, a cat exists. And location. The cat is here.
Here. A cat. Probably I see a cat here or something like that.
Yes.
Yeah. But this is another interesting. This guy wrote an E prime nut, wrote a little bit. And you can't. His point is that if you get rid of it, you can't really tell. Okay, I'll give you a paragraph in E prime. But when you find out that you don't quite seem to be when you don't quite seem able to convey your meaning, or that your grammar checker keeps telling you to avoid the passive voice, consider using E prime. It does some to some degree clarify our thought and meaning, and also just provides some useful mental exercise, breaking adhesions to convention and thus stimulating creativity. It doesn't sound that weird. That was all in E prime.
No, but the problem is it doesn't. But I think that in other cases, as we were doing, I think you do contortions. And I'm going back to me writing the press releases, because there are times when it's not me doing it. You know what I mean? I don't want to be there. I want it to be the actor.
I agree with you. I agree with you. I just was surprised, though, reading that, because he wrote it in regular English, too. And either way, this sounds pretty good. I mean, it sounds like, in defense of your boss, it sounds like you can do it and not have too many. Maybe you're contorting, but the point is, when you read it, it's not that contorted. That's what surprised me.
Okay, you write press releases without to be.
No, I think we're going to do the rest. No, Kathy said bitterly. Well, just for that, I'm going to, for now on, I'm only going to speak in E prime for the rest of the don't quote me on that. I actually agree with you, Kathy. It sounds horrible. But I was just surprised. It didn't sound that bad. I thought it would be much more contorted.
No, it didn't. I thought that was fine. It was not contorted at all. I would not have noticed. I would not have stopped at any point and thought, like, well, this is a little strange. Wordy.
Yeah.
I would not have.
Yeah.
But anyway, now we're back to pet peeve. Incidentally.
Yes.
We still, if you guys have any pet peeves, you people, all of you, anyone has pet peeves, keep sending them in, because we have so many now that we're really going to work on something for the fall, like a really nice, probably a double header at least at this point. Mm-hmm. As well as just we're throwing them in. So pet peeves, send them in, pet peeves.
Yes.
And we got one here, don't we, Ross?
We got an email from Heidi who said, I'm submitting for your consideration the peeve that seems to bother me far more than it bothers anyone else. The misspelling of, I guess you would call them interjections or guttural noises. When I state my opinion, they should be spelled in a certain way and not be confused with other meaningful words that look similar. I've heard objections that they don't have any formal spelling, but I strongly disagree. Okay, example, yeah, Y-E-A-H, as in, yeah, I agree with that. I've seen friends and colleagues use yah, Y-A-H, yay, Y-A-Y, yay, Y-E-A, and yah. Cringe. Okay.
I agree.
Okay, Fletcher, what is the correct spelling of yeah?
Well, I would spell it Y-E-A-H. Mm-hmm. Some of those would cause confusion, like Y-A-Y. Yay is very different from yeah.
Right. And I pronounced Y-E-A as yay.
Yay, Y-E-A.
Like yay or nay.
Yeah.
I would say that means yes, but yay in a more formal, like English courtroom sense or something.
I remember quite a few years ago seeing someone spell yeah, Y-A, and it kind of, it was weird to me. I didn't understand why you would do that, since the word yeah is right there. Mm-hmm. But it kind of seemed like maybe it was an age thing. Like I was a little older than the people I would see doing that. And so I wondered if it was just...
I think you're right.
Yeah, it could be. I would read that as yah, like yah. Like
yeah,
that.
Yeah, for sure. I would too. And it took me a minute to understand that they were just saying yeah. I think it's a little weird. But if it's an age thing, then it's one of those things that is just leaving us behind. I don't really know.
Well, interestingly, YA is in the OED, is they have as a alternate spelling for YAH, which is yes, which is yeah. Interestingly, YA as in our year. And they have it. It's archaic and British regional, Scottish and English regional. Back in the Old English, you had No, they have Y-E-A.
Y-E-A.
I still they also have ye, Y-E-E. I say it's yeah, Y-E-A-H.
That's basically the bottom line is, in most English documents, etc., it's spelled Y-E-A-H. Mm-hmm. Now, let's move on to something else, which is when I say it's mostly spelled Y-E-A-H and someone disagrees with me, they go, nah.
Nah.
How do you spell that?
Oh, that's funny, because nah to me would probably be N-A-H, which is like nah.
Right. Yep.
That's too. Okay, now, Heidi wrote, which fascinated me, because Heidi, no offense, but I'm going to take exception to what you wrote here. She wrote, I don't even know how to write you about the word I'll call nyah, N-Y-E-A-H, as in yeah, with an N in front of it. She said, it's the opposite of yeah, as in nyah, let's not go today after all.
Yeah, I would
and
say
I
nah.
I don't think that's nyah, that's nah.
Nah. Yeah, it's nyah, nyah, you can't get me, which is something else.
You're right.
Yeah, but that I would spell N-Y-A-H. I would not have N-Y-E-A-H.
Nyah, nyah, yeah, you're right.
Yeah, I would too. So, I agree.
So nah to both of you would also be N-A-H? Nah,
yes.
Nah, nah.
And that tends to be the dictionary, the basic form reflected in the dictionary.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, the casual no.
And they basically date it back to 1920. Reflecting a drawn-out American English pronunciation of no.
I'm sorry, Ross. No, I have to cut you off there. No, that the drawn-out yeah is different. That's the nah in 1920. Up here, it was a colloquial no back in the 1800s.
Oh, I see. You're right. Okay, Kathy, I was reading it in E prime, so I didn't get it correct there. You're right. Looking at the thing, 1886 tops that statement. You're right. I didn't realize that. Okay.
That's all right. So we're saying it's nah, Heidi, not nyah. Mm-hmm. So you can rest assured you can now start spelling it N-A-H, and we'll all appreciate that.
And then we do have nyah, N-Y-A-H, which dates back to 1906.
And that's like the taunt.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, the writer Nesbitt with E.B. Nesbitt, I guess. I do think you might have given the roses for nothing, said Bobby indignantly. Nyang, nyang, said Peter disagreeably.
Nyang, they have it.
N-Y-A-N-G. That's interesting. Wow.
Nyang, nyang.
Yeah.
Yeah, I was like nyang, 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 nyang. Yeah.
Well, moving quickly and right along, she says, it also drives me crazy when I'm reading dialogue in a book and the author tries to indicate either agreement or disagreement with various spellings of uh-huh or uh-huh mm-hmm. or uh-uh. In my pronunciation, I pretty much say uh-uh for agreement. Uh-huh for agreement.
Spell that.
She has U-H and then H-U-H.
U-H-H-U-H?
Yes.
We both say U-H, new word, H-U-H.
Oh, okay.
And the O-E-D says U-H, H-U-H. We have a hyphen.
I would probably hyphenate it if I were writing it.
Mm-hmm.
I would too.
Interesting, Ross. You just said mm-hmm, which is along those lines, but would be spelled M-M-M-H-M-M-M, wouldn't it?
Right. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
Maybe not so many M's on the second word there, but mm-hmm.
Well, actually, Merriam-Webster has MM-HMM.
I would have put
that's what I would do.
Yeah, I would put three M's on the first, but I understand either way.
You're right. I said, mm-hmm. That's what I say. I don't say, uh huh.
Yeah,
I say, uh huh.
I say, mm-hmm. Yeah. You say, mm-hmm. I say, uh huh. A little song.
I want to say, as someone who edits both of you every week, your audio, you both say, mm-hmm, a lot. So
we do. we don't. Spell that now.
Yeah. For me, it would not work to have UH-UH. You'd have to probably have like UNH-UNH.
Yep.
Agreed. Interestingly enough, as in the sound expressing negation or denial, the OED has their first example of that from the 50s.
Hmm.
Yeah, that one struck me as odd.
It's one of the hardest of the words that we've brought up, though, to really be sure how to spell, though.
Yeah.
Because you're not really, those sounds that we're making don't really have letters to go with them. And the stop, you know, the I guess it's almost a glottal stop.
Yeah.
I guess it is. We don't really have letters that go with that, so maybe it's not surprising that an actual spelling out of that in a consistent way wouldn't have shown up for a while.
No. Collins Dictionary says it. They spell it UNH-UNH and hyphen UNH, and they have it as American English. They don't have an origin.
And they an alternate spelling of UH-UH, uh-uh.
Yeah.
Which it doesn't work for me.
That would be the other option, right? Because you are kind of doing that glottal stop in there. The problem is we don't really know whether somebody's saying or if they're saying
no. We don't.
And that N sound is kind of in there. It's just weird because we don't perfectly have letters that correspond to those sounds.
No. It's funny looking it up. Everybody is saying it's an American sound.
Mm-hmm.
I know. That's really, I was looking at the same thing.
Now
yeah.
I'm thinking, so Brits don't say uh-uh?
Maybe
what
not.
What do they say?
Maybe not.
I don't know. We should ask right now. If anyone's British, tell us and, you know, write in.
Yeah, what's your extremely casual sound that isn't an actual word to say no?
Yeah.
There's also nuh-uh, we forgot.
Yeah, sure, yes, nuh-uh.
Nuh-uh. I just realized
nuh-uh
that.
Nuh-uh would be okay for me, N-U-H-U-H, or N-U-H hyphen U-H.
Correct.
I would be okay with that, because there's no confusion about saying in that case.
Yeah.
There's also uh-huh.
Uh-huh.
Like, it is, uh-huh. U-H-H-U-H.
Yes.
Often ironic or non-committal, recorded from 1894.
And what's funny is that's not consistent sound-wise with uh-uh, because we are saying
No.
That nasal sound is in there, but we're not spelling it with an N, are we?
No.
Uh-huh. No.
That's so weird.
I was just thinking, though, with nuh-uh to me is more sarcastic. Like, you do it, nuh-uh.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, definitely. It is.
Don't you think? You don't say nuh-uh like you say uh-uh.
Yeah.
You know, they're different. They use them at different times.
It's either more sarcastic or maybe more emphatic, right? You could be
nuh-uh. Nuh-uh. Yeah.
Okay, guys. Whoa. Let's cut the conversation short.
And we have talked about whoa before.
We have, just quickly,
to
answer Heidi quickly, whoa, the generally accepted spelling is W-H-O-A.
Mm-hmm.
A lot of people, she's peeved at this, and we agree with her, they spell it W-O-A-H.
That's absolutely acceptable to me. W-O-A-H
is totally absolutely acceptable,
fine.
According to most people now. Yeah. It's entered the dictionary.
It is not acceptable to me, however.
We both prefer whoa.
I am one of those who call it an abomination. I hate W-O-A-H. I don't know why. I've talked about this last time. Because to me, that's Noah. Noah and the Ark, Woa and the Ark.
Right.
It's
yes.
not Woa, it's Noah.
Yes. I always call him Noah.
It drives me bonkers.
No. And we found one thing from Forbes from 2014, which really needs to be corrected. They were talking about the Zeppelin organization with about 15 people traveling with the band. And the end quote was, "And woe betide if the stuff wasn't ready," he said. And they spelled woe betide as W-H-O-A.
Oh, boy.
New word, B-E. New word, T-I-D-E. And I think Forbes needed a good copy editor. Usually I'm always screaming when we get copy edited, but there are times.
Whoa! Stop it!
You're Saying It Wrong is part of the NPR network and is produced in the studios of KMUW in Wichita, Kansas by me, Fletcher Powell. Kathy Petrus records from her home in Armilla, Spain. Ross Petrus from his home in Toronto, Ontario in Canada. Torin Anderson composed our theme music. Our digital team is Beth Golay and Carly Cooper. Carly Cooper is also our video editor. You can subscribe to our channel on YouTube. You can find all of our past episodes by subscribing to the You're Saying It Wrong podcast, wherever you get your podcasts, or by visiting us at kmuw.org. If you have a question for Kathy and Ross, if you'd like to suggest a topic, or you just want to reach out, you can email me at powell@kmuw.org. or email them at kandrpetrus@gmail.com. You can also record a voice memo of yourself asking your question. You might get your voice heard on air. Or you can download the KMUW app and press the Talk to Us button. You can find Kathy and Ross's books pretty much anywhere you get books, and a handful of them are also available on audiobook, read by the authors themselves. Thanks for joining us. We'll be back next week.
These days, there's so much news, it can be hard to keep up with what it all means for you, your family, and your community. The Consider This podcast from NPR features our award-winning journalism. 6 days a week, we bring you a deep dive on a news story and provide the context and analysis that helps you make sense of the news. We get behind the headlines. We get to the truth. Listen to the Consider This podcast from NPR.